Hi, I'm Ted Holting, and this is Durango 1918, The Pandemic, the War, and the Peace. Our KSUT series explores what life was like in the fall of 1918, a time when the Spanish flu spread all over the world. America had already entered World War I, and the future looked mighty uncertain. Our series is co-sponsored by Colorado Humanities and the Southwest Humanities Roundtable. The Roundtable is a coalition of local organizations which create and promote every September History Live. You'll see banners and brochures around town announcing all the programs, and our show, Durango 1918, is part of that project. I want to thank the Roundtable for coming up with the idea, as well as Tammy Graham and Ken Brott for finding some airtime. And special thanks to Spencer Snar and Daisy Grice at the Durango Public Library for being crackerjack researchers, and especially to my colleague Judith Reynolds for writing these fantastic scripts. To tell the story of Durango in 1918, I'll be reading from primary documents, the Durango Democrat, the Durango Evening Herald, the Silverton Standard, the Gunnison News Champion, and Denver's Weekly Courier. So let's begin where we left off last time. By early October 1918, a number of children had died in Durango from the Spanish flu. The Durango Democrat noted on October 9th, one day after 8-year-old Louisa Bass's death, two infant deaths, a 10-month-old girl and the infant son of Mr. and Mrs. J. Glade Snodgrass, adding that, quote, Mr. Snodgrass is with the American Expeditionary Forces in France. Unlike today, in the fall of 2020, citizens in 1918 were struggling with different world-shaking events. The Spanish flu, which ended up killing about 550,000 Americans, and World War I, which killed between 25 and 50 million people worldwide. America had joined the conflict late in early April 1817, so newspapers of the time reported on the war effort as well as the rapid spread of the Spanish flu. Now, a word about the name and the origin of the Spanish flu. Still remains uncertain where the 1918 virus emerged. It's known that it appeared and spread throughout the European continent during the Great War. Its nickname, the Spanish flu, apparently came from a widespread misunderstanding, as Spain was neutral during World War I and didn't practice censorship of the news. So consequently, Spanish media reported war news and the illness that spread through the rest of Europe like wildfire. When King Alfonso XIII himself came down with the disease and survived, world coverage increased. War and disease news from Spain became the main source of information, and somehow people came to believe España was ground zero. With no luck, the Spanish countered by calling the virus the French flu. So now you know. Now, it is known that the first U.S. reports of the virus came in early spring of 1918, when on March 11th, wounded soldiers returning to a Kansas military base also had the virus and died. The Spanish flu was first reported in Colorado on September 21st of 1918, not in Denver or Durango, but in Boulder. 250 wounded soldiers from Montana had been transferred to the Student Army Training Corps facility at the University of Colorado. 13 of the wounded were seriously ill with the Spanish flu. The virus then spread so quickly throughout Colorado that Governor Julius Gunter issued the executive order mentioned in our first episode. On October 16th, the governor proclaimed a statewide ban on all public and private gatherings. Put the outbreak in perspective, between that fateful September day in 1918 and June the following year, close to 8,000 Coloradans died from the Spanish flu and its complications. Moreover, Colorado had one of the highest mortality rates in the country, which later analysts attributed to two populations with compromised lung functioning, minors and tubercular patients in various sanitaria, ironically in Colorado, for their health. Here's what the Oak Creek Times reported on October 11th of 1918. Blanche Kennedy, a University of Denver student, was the first influenza-related fatality in Denver. It's believed she contracted the disease in Chicago. Shortly after her death, Dr. William Sharpley, Denver's manager of health, ordered the house in which she died quarantined. He quickly advised the public on the rules of the flu, like washing hands and covering coughs, which mostly related to flu prevention. Well, Dr. William H. Sharpley wrote this account a few months after the initial crisis. In Denver, all places of amusements, churches, and schools were closed, and a ban was placed upon all meetings where people congregated. During the latter part of the epidemic, when our force had more time in which to investigate conditions, it was found that the greater spread of the disease was due to visitors in sick rooms and infected houses. The placarding of houses and rigid quarantine, which at present time, in November, is in force, is lessening the danger somewhat. A Weld County native and first-year college student, Nova Rose, wrote a personal account of her family struggle. Quote, father caught it, mother took a leave of absence from teaching at Denver's Whittier School, up to nurse him, but she herself became so tired, she then sent for me to come from my college freshman year and I relieve her. The second day after I arrived, father died of a massive hemorrhage. His body was taken to Denver for burial, but the day of the funeral I couldn't raise my head from the pillow. People avoided gatherings, so mother alone saw my father buried. The flu spread through Colorado quickly, struck many small towns hard, with one exception, Gunnison. On October 10th, the Gunnison News Champion warned the community in no uncertain terms, quote, the flu is after us. It is circulating in almost every village and community around us. Then Gunnison took a drastic step. The town declared a quarantine against the world, so reported the News Champion. Barricades and fences have been erected on all main highways near the county lines, wrote Dr. F.P. Hansen, the county physician. Any person may leave our county at his will. None may return except those who will go into voluntary quarantine. Violators will be dealt with to the fullest extent of the law, and to this we promise our personal attention. And for 4 months, the town closed all schools and churches, banned street gatherings, ordered citizens to shelter in place, quarantined visitors, and arrested violators. And after 4 months, there were no cases of the Spanish flu. Gunnison survived the pandemic's first two waves, the most deadly, without one recorded illness. In early February of 1919, Gunnison lifted restrictions, but it turned out to be too soon. The third wave in March infected more than 100 Gunnison citizens. Fortunately, this was a milder version and everyone survived. It may now seem quaint that a century ago, the citizens of Gunnison believed local doctors and police and read local newspapers for guidance. From late September, the Gunnison News Champion published front page stories on the influenza and practical advice gleaned from local doctors in every edition. Throughout the fall, however, the second wave of viral infections continued its march through Greater Colorado. The Weekly Courier carried a United Press story dated November 26th of 1918 with this headline, flu in Denver becomes more alarming every day. The influenza situation is again looming very alarming with the announcement of 600 new cases being reported in the last 24 hours. Allowance must be made, however, to the number of over Sunday cases, including in this number. There were 12 additional deaths from influenza and 3 deaths from pneumonia. The public is not complying with the influenza mask orders from the health authorities. This is due to considerable confusion in the minds of people because of the orders and counter-orders. The latest change is from the strict order that all who ride streetcars must wear masks to the mere recommendation that masks be worn in cars. Also, the previous order that masks must be worn in department stores has been entirely withdrawn. A few weeks later, on December 13th, the Denver Weekly Courier added a story about the impact on the holiday season. Shopping will be unusual this year. 2 weeks later, the Weekly Courier ran another odd Christmas story. Sting of death removes signs of Merry Christmas. The story includes news of several families whose loved ones had recently died of the Spanish flu. They included Iva Kerr Holloman, Walter Davidson, who's 25, who left behind a widow, 2 children, his parents, and 8 brothers, including his twin and a sister. Also, Andrew J. Matthews, age 29, died from pneumonia following influenza, and Andrew's mother is ill with influenza now. Advertisements in the Durango Democrat started to feature comfort ads, especially room oil heaters that showed married couples happily indoors or sleeping through the night. No more fire-building nightmares, no more worry, simply turn over in bed and leave it to the trusty Vortex heater. Why build fires at 5 a.m.? Why be a slave to a heating plant that eats fuel like a demon? Cut your fuel bill in half with a Vortex. The double down draft gives double fuel saving. So people were tuned into more practical matters despite the pandemic. Well, 2 weeks after Durango recorded its first Spanish flu death, the rapid spread of the disease was evident in a report counting 9,000 cases statewide. As reported in the Durango Democrat on October 25th, quote, the first figures of the influenza epidemic in the state as a whole, as given out by the state health department, show 9,000 cases in Colorado. 311 deaths have been reported and indicated abatement in all sections. Denver reported 24 deaths and 222 new cases, both a decrease over the previous 24 hours. As we witnessed today, upticks and downturns were noted, and although 9,000 cases seem a lot statewide, apparently that represented a minuscule downturn. At the end of the article, the unacknowledged reporter commented on the situation in Durango and Silverton, quote, "It was not learned exactly how many new cases there were in Durango and vicinity yesterday, but only one death was reported up till the midnight hour. Four or five additional deaths are reported to have occurred at Silverton, with the total number of cases between 126 and 150. Here is said to be something like 250 cases in Silverton." Now, to put this in national perspective, the same article summarized overall totals for the country. Total number of cases since the start of the epidemic was 292,770, with 15,497 deaths. However, on October 15, 1918, the headlines read, "Heavy toll of flu in San Juan." Don't kid yourself into thinking the influenza epidemic is decreasing in Durango and vicinity. The fact is, the number of cases continues to increase. 25 new cases yesterday, which brings the total of cases in this city to 281. Mr. Kingsley, the engineer in charge of the construction work on the Durango-Silverton Highway, passed away at an early hour in the evening. No information as to disposition or due date of funerals available at this time, and the remains are at the Goodman Undertaking Parlors. Also, Alex Erickson, who Wednesday afternoon entered a local hospital to receive treatment for influenza, passed away yesterday morning. He came here from Silverton a few days ago, and according to documents found among his personal effects, he willed his property to Herman Mattson of Silverton. The report also listed a number of citizens who had been hospitalized with the influenza, including conductor for the DNRG Ed Kuhn, Mrs. C.B. McGue, wife of an engineer for the railroad company, and Mrs. Anna Robbins. Nurse Mrs. Bessie Lewis recovered and was able to leave the hospital, but Nurse Medina died and her remains are being sent by railroad to her parents in San Luis, Colorado. The first person to die of the flu in Pagosa Springs, D. McMurtry, left a wife and two children. And the reporter concludes with some advice. There's no use of getting panicky from the influenza epidemic, but turn to, observe all the precautions recommended by the health officials and stand by ready to lend a hand if necessary. For it is only by the combined efforts of all that this epidemic will be mastered and finally stamped out. In our next episode, we'll look more closely at the small Colorado town which experienced the highest rate of infection and death per capita in the nation. That's Silverton. Until next time, I'm Ted Holtine.